Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons have business before the Honorable. The United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 087012. David W. Oster et al. Appellants versus Government of the Republic of South Africa. Mr. DeRasmo for the appellants, Mr. Goldstein for the appellee.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Joseph DeRasmo. I'm the attorney for the appellants in the case. And I want to thank this Court for the privilege of being permitted to argue this matter. Given the brevity of time posed here, I would go to the central issue in this case, which is as follows, as I see it, boiling it all down. The trial judge, we contend, fell into the error of determining the facts, primary jurisdictional facts in this case, on a motion to dismiss by the defendants when the allegations of the complaint and the affidavits and exhibits, which were essentially uncontradicted, were more than sufficient to require trial or at least an evidentiary hearing on the jurisdictional factual questions of whether or not the individual and front company involved in this case were agencies or instrumentalities of the South African state.
But how do we get past Transamerica? I mean, in Transamerica, we dismissed on allegations that were far more detailed than yours. Yours are simply that there's a front company here. That's insufficient.
Well, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. I think
that's all you've said, right? You said
no, we attached an uncontradicted affidavit from Mr. Peter Gosler, for example, which is contained.
But in Transamerica, they owned majority stock. They picked the board of directors. They were involved in the day-to-day operations. We found that was insufficient. Insufficient allegations. Well, don't have anything approaching that.
I think each case must be determined on its own jurisdictional facts. And I think here, what the court had in front of it was not only the allegations of the complaint, which alleged as follows in paragraph 12, page 11, that as a result of post-judgment discovery proceedings in the New York case and the investigation of the undersigned attorneys and other agents, the plaintiffs have now discovered that Messrs. Sonder and Van Rooyen are, in fact, military intelligence agents of the former South African apartheid regime. In the case of Mr. Sonder, of the present National Intelligence Agency of the defendant, the Republic of South Africa, both Morrow and Intercol Part Limited, a company which reportedly acted as a private firm engaged in the business of intelligence gathering, covert investigations, was actually a front company utilized by the National Intelligence Agency of the
government. The legal standard of Transamerica is that you have to allege that there was domination. You haven't alleged that.
Well, we also indicated, and we did allege, that at the time of the events described in the New York Magistrate's report, Messrs. Stonder and Van Rooyen and the front companies involved here, Intercol and OceanTech, were acting for and on behalf of the government of South Africa within the scope of their employment and their duties, in that they were engaged in efforts to fund ETEC International Bank, a bank designed to funnel funds for intelligence and military activities, transactions to move money and assets in violation of sanction laws into and out of South Africa, and other activities deemed essential at that time to the South African government. And the funds obtained from the plaintiffs, uncontradicted, approximately $350,000, were used to carry out those activities for their government employer.
What are the specific facts
that are
identified that connect South Africa with the acts loss.
In volume 2 of the, I'm sorry.
What are the specific acts of South Africa connecting it to the losses suffered by plaintiffs? Specific facts. I mean, I understand you. I mean, you, for sort of a movie view wrap-up of plot, you gave a summary, but no mention of any facts.
Well, we have the affidavit of Peter Gosler, which is contained in the appendix at volume 2, pages 194 and 195. Who says, in pertinent part, as to one of the individuals involved here, first, Mr. Adrian Baron Stonder. I'm well acquainted with Mr. Adrian Baron Stonder. I was introduced to him during the latter part of 1991 after having partaken in funding programs for the South African government. I was introduced to him by Craig Williamson, South Africa's super spy note, who had been the subject of inquiries. At the time I was introduced to him, Stoddard and Williamson confirmed to me they were in the same gang together, namely they were covert operatives of the apartheid regime. With respect to
interesting, but what does it have to do with the events at issue here?
Well, because these men had established a front company that was not only in the exhibit attached called Quest for Release, called Intercol, and another one called Ocean Tech, which were operating in New York. They had a New York employee using this company. They violated the security law, according to the magistrate's report, these companies, in a case, and on the basis of which a judgment was ultimately entered in the case. And by the way, even though it was a default judgment, Your Honor, it was an honor, it was a judgment that was entered after the defendants had filed an answer in the case, albeit answer was improper in that they had no member of the bar who was admitted to the bar to represent them in a U.S. court. On the basis, Mr. Gosler...
Gosler doesn't say who controlled the company or to what degree.
Well, Your Honor, I cannot... what he says is this. At the time Rolf Van Hoyen was introduced to me, he was introduced as Olaf Rondin, as he only lived about a kilometer away from me. I was quickly able to verify he was, in fact, Rolf Ignatius Van Hoyen. When I confronted him about this, he said he only wanted to maintain his cover. He then explained to me that he worked for military intelligence, that he was in fact very involved with the management of money for the old apartheid regime. I find it to be highly intelligent. He definitely moved a lot of the money overseas for the clandestine operations of the government of the day. Van Rooyen used paperwork from Ocean Tech Bank and was involved with accounts in the USA and Greece. Stoddard used paperwork from Intercol, which
still
used...
doesn't say who controlled the company or to what degree.
If I were drafting this affidavit from Mr. Gosler, I suppose I could put that specific case-oriented language. But what I would submit to court genuinely is that there was this is at a stage where there had been no evidentiary hearing, no trial, no discovery, oral argument on the motion.
Why didn't you pursue this in the supplemental proceeding?
We did. We actually.
Why is it here then?
Well,
everything you're seeking could have been sought there.
I don't know that all of the relief that we requested in this complaint could have been sought in supplemental proceedings. We did in fact issue a request during the pendency of this case to the South African government, which was received by them. The card was and they never responded with exhaustive interrogation.
So what happened in the supplemental proceeding?
We started it, and there was no response from the South African government, and this case was pending. So, frankly...
Is the supplemental proceeding still pending in the Southern District of New York?
They're not pending, but they could be reinstated, yes. They could be reinstated. That's a very expensive proposition, Your Honor, and we have a pending case in the District of Columbia, which we think we have at least sufficient allegations, just in the complaint, but in the affidavits and exhibits attached to the complaint that establish what Phoenix and Foremost require, which is at least some type of inquiry into the facts surrounding the jurisdiction.
Supplemental proceedings, if the money that you're owed from Mr. Roy and Mr. Sender,
yes,
is actually South African money, you can get them a supplemental proceeding. Why do you need to be here?
Well, I think there's two ways to do it, and it was our view, in view of the lack of response from the South African government, the only way to get their attention was to establish what in fact is the case, that they were the...
I was under the impression that in supplemental proceedings there was broad remedial power to trace funds. So I don't understand what you're saying. They couldn't get their attention in...
Well, we issued a letter of request, and we got no response. In fact, that it was served on them. That meant enforcement proceeding in South Africa. When we have the availability of U.S. courts to proceed directly against that government for the acts of its own agents. So that's the path we chose in this case. I see my time is running out. I've reserved only 3 minutes for rebuttal. As much as I'd like to be here for another 20 minutes, I'll have to move on. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, David Goldstein for the Republic of South Africa. The FSIA, as interpreted by the Supreme Court, by this circuit, and by all other courts, has always emphasized that holding a foreign sovereign into the U.S. courts is a very serious matter to be handled with, in the Supreme Court words in Verlinden and Judge Ward's words in Florence McKesson, with grace and comedy. And particularly, this court and all other circuits have been vigilant in imposing on plaintiffs a rigorous attribution standard before asserting jurisdiction over a foreign sovereign for the acts of others, including wholly owned state corporations under the separate entity principle of bond sec, and is particularly interpreted in this court by Transamerica Leasing and Formosa Kesson. Here, as the district court found, plaintiff's pleadings plus plaintiff's evidentiary submissions all taken as true, despite what I would say the obvious, fantastical, bizarre conspiracy theories at the base of these claims, fall woefully short of the necessary factual allegations for a U.S. court to assert jurisdiction or a foreign state for the alleged acts of the two individuals and two corporations, what in the brief we refer to as the underlying defense on the Southern District action. Having failed to get satisfaction on the underlying defense in 7 years, taking no discovery, pursuing no supplemental proceeding, post-judgment collection remedy.
Is that right? Did they pursue no supplemental proceedings? I thought they did.
They claim they sent a letter of request. The letter of request is a formal document through the Hague Convention. The only thing the South African government received was two subpoenas directed to Sonder. They are not letters of request.
They're saying supplemental proceedings with respect to the Republic of South Africa.
They've never initiated any supplemental proceedings with respect to the Republic of South Africa. Apparently, Mr. DeRasimo mailed subpoenas to the Republic of South Africa for Sonder and from Roy. We've asked for the letters of request. We've checked the court files. Letter of requests are court to court. Then the South African court would decide whether to honor that letter of request, whether conform with the Hague Convention, and how to proceed in accordance with both the Hague Convention and domestic law. That never happened, and therefore they never pursued that remedy. We addressed some of that behind the immunity jurisdiction arguments we made in the district court. District court went appropriately first to jurisdiction under the attribution issue and found, woefully inadequate pleadings and evidentiary submissions. They didn't get any remedies from the defendants. Then after the U.S. banks, apparently the banks the banks denied that any of this ever happened. And they went after the U.S. government, and which supposedly ran this multi-billion, trillion-dollar conspiracy. So 12 years after the fact, Pinsa sued South Africa for well over $100 million.
I don't see any reference, anything, I think, to discovery. Was there a discovery?
No discovery was sought. No discovery was requested. We never sought a stay of discovery. The judge never issued a ruling on discovery. 4.5 years after the complaint was filed, Mr. DeRasimo made one-line request for discovery in October of 2006. But the judge hadn't stayed discovery. He never asked for a Rule 26 conference. He never served discovery on the Republic of South Africa. We never sought to stay. We might have sought to stay because under FISC Consulting, I don't think we're entitled to discovery, but they never asked for it. They never asked for an evidentiary hearing. They never asked for leave to amend the complaint. And they never sought to take any discovery.
What happened after this one-line communication?
The judge issued his ruling about a year later. The judge asked for the case pended for a while. I think we moved in 2002 to dismiss, and he ruled in 2007. The judge at some point asked whether the parties wanted to supplement. We filed a brief paper with some case that had been decided, and Mr. DeRasimo asked in one line for discovery.
But nobody ruled against. You didn't attack that motion, and the court didn't rule on it?
The court didn't rule on it other than to say, look, it's a Phoenix Consult scenario. I will look at the allegations. He went. Mr. Phoenix Consulting, in fact, he should have only looked at the allegations. He was over-generous. He also looked at the evidentiary submissions. He took them to be true as well. The Gosler deposition, for example, as Mr. Rasmussen just said, he met Stonder at the end of 91. The last transaction here was 1990. Gosler doesn't know anything. He says, I surmise, I speculate, maybe plain theft. This was for the government in exile. I mean, what we're talking about here are probably two Afghaners who are on the extreme end of the pro-apartheid resistance to change. They, everybody in all Afrikaners served in the military in that time period. They probably knew people in the military. They may have had some connections. I'm not here to defend either the apartheid regime. There's been massive disclosures about front companies. There's no denying that these things existed. There's just nothing here in 18 years since this happened, in 7 years or 8 years to the judgment, connecting the Republic of South Africa to any of the acts involving these plaintiffs. As this court said in Transamerica, even if there is a principal agent relation in some circumstances, and there's nothing here to show that there was, jurisdiction of a sovereign United States court cannot be maintained unless the plaintiff meets the burden of showing that the entity, the companies or the individuals, were acting as agents of particularly challenged conduct. And as Judge Roberts found below, said, look, there's nothing to show a principal agent relationship here. He says scant evidence, if any. And he says it's wholly insufficient evidence to show domination or control of the by the Republic of these entities. But he says, but even if there was something in one of those evidentiary submissions to show some agency relationship, it has nothing to do with this case. He drops a phone and says, but it has nothing to do with this case. And he cites Transamerica, quotes Transamerica, which makes clear that there must be something. Not only the 8 years between the 94 case and the 2002 case, plaintiffs discovered nothing connecting a republic to this case. But in the 5 years it was pending below, they did not seek to supplement the record. They did not proceed under the Southern District ruling. They did not find anything in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. There's nothing in the amnesty petition filed by thousands of former apartheid regime members that would in any way connect South Africa. Much, much worse than this has obviously been disclosed in South Africa since 1994. The notion that there's just this is somehow not available just doesn't make any sense and is clearly not the case. Now, what plaintiffs attempted to do here is to essentially say that the FSIA converts foreign sovereigns into guarantors or insurers in the U.S. courts for their citizens' misdeeds as long as they come up with vague general connection or if they can put words in a complaint that say control, agent, true owner. But as this court has held in more than one of these FSIA cases that this court gets from time to time, there has to be sufficient factual matter pled to that, if taken as true, would show the necessary elements to bring the sovereign to the U.S. court to strip it of immunity. It's even held quite strictly in the A7 terrorism case that you can't just say, you know, terrorist sponsor, support, active, this person, that person, in the Owen decision. The district court spent, I think, 3 pages outlining very clear factual allegation. This court said, well, there's not a formalistic heightened pleading standard, 8A applies. You have to plead sufficient factual matter that, if true, would strip the sovereign of immunity. And this court, applying that to BASEC, whereas in foremost McKesson, a rigorous attribution standard, the Second Circuit has followed that standard and has said, look, have to be very clear. There has to be factual matter that brings you within that standard. In Transamerica, as Judge Griffith noted, there was a lot of evidence and a lot of allegations that a military officer controlled the company. It was 100% owned. It was all the directors were appointed by the government. There was cash infused from the government. This court appropriately held, hey, that's what state corporations are. That's what states do with respect to state corporations. You have to show such domination and control under standard corporate veil piercing principles that the drastic step of saying a foreign sovereign, a foreign state, shall be answerable in a U.S. court for the acts of alleged agencies and instrumentalities has been met. And the district court, in the last two-thirds of its decision, went line by line, item by item, through the four potential theories: domination and control, principal agent, fraud and justice, or individual liability, state liability for individual acts under the Fourth Circuit and Ninth Circuit cases and Fifth Circuit case. And he laid it out. There's just nothing there connecting these particular plaintiffs, these particular underlying defendants, to the Republic of South Africa. And I thank the court, and the district court's decision was eminently correct and should be affirmed by this court. Thank you.
Does Mr. Durasmo have any time left? You don't have any time left, Mr. Durasmo. We'll give you 1 minute if you're going to be replying to things that he said.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ron. First of all, there was a letter of request that's been printed in the appendix, volume 1 of 3, pages 96 and 97. There's an actual copy of the order of the court granting letter of request under the Hague Convention, and there's also the copy of the registered receipt showing it was received by the Justice Department. Mr. Stoner, at page 606 and 607, indicated he established long-term long reach at Front Company. He established Interpol, and that he's doing that for the same instrumental in the extremely sensitive political development in the Seychelles, and they've made use of these things, as the government did, in order to circumnavigate sanctions, to carry out gold transactions, to purchase oil, to direct secret money transactions, and to move money supplies to entrench foreign undertakings. That's contained in appendix at pages 03, 6, 10. So there was a direct connection established by Mr. Stoner. What I, as far as discovery is concerned, because of the pendency of the motion to dismiss.
Time is up.
Thank you.
We have your argument. Thank you very much.